which is another thing that we run into a lot. I feel like as entrepreneurs, we are the bottleneck oftentimes in our business. And so finding ways to not be the bottleneck is really key to growing and scaling too.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Melissa Johnson has been flipping houses in San Antonio, Texas since 2003. With close to 1,000 real estate transactions under her belt, she also has built a portfolio of rental properties and real estate notes while also raising 5 children. She provides coaching, support, and education for other high-level real estate investors nationwide and enjoys giving back to the REI community by hosting the E3 podcast for women and more, as well as running the San Antonio Invest Her meetup group. Melissa, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hey, the pleasure's all mine. The same questions ask everybody who comes on. Can you give us a brief overview of where you started, where you are now, and how did you get there?
Sure. So where I started, just working a corporate job, got into real estate part-time during that time and worked part-time with real estate probably for, 4 years, something like that. The first 4 years were actually spent still working a job, but then part-time investing. And eventually went full-time with that. I think that was in 2008, went full-time with real estate, me. And then kind of trot along for several years, just doing the minimum, whatever, not really looking to build or scale or anything like that. 2014, we started a software company and I actually took over the entire house flipping operations. So at that point I realized I needed people. And so built that team up, and that's what really took the business to the next level, and did that for several years, started incorporating a wholesaling arm into that company. So did that for a little bit, and now have made a transition more into coaching and just working with other people and trying to lift them up and teach them and coach them through doing what I do, just help them avoid the pitfalls.
Right, right. Which I'm sure you could write a book on those.
I could tell you everything not to do.
You know, sometimes that's the best guide to have is the one that says, don't walk over that edge, because there is an edge. Sure. That's fascinating. What was it like? So, you know, 1,000 houses is a lot of real estate transactions. What was it like, or what was kind of the key moment when you, I know you said that people were the key, but when you said, hey, I've got to bring on more people, what did that look like?
So for me, it was really, I really wanted to, you know, I didn't know about lifestyle business at the time. And there was like so much I didn't know at that time, but I knew I needed help and I knew I needed the right people. And I had this vision of really being in that CEO seat and not being in the weeds every day, you know, because I've got kids and I got other interests and things like that. And it was like taking up so much of my time wearing all the hats in the business. And so I realized if I ever want to get out of this, I've got to have people. And plus, like, let's face it, as entrepreneurs, we're all kind of squirrel chasers and stuff. So I need people around me to keep me focused and on task and to actually implement all these ideas that I have all the time. So that was like a real game changer, just hiring people, bringing the right people on, putting systems and processes in place, and then just evaluating everything.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's probably one of the hardest thing for those of us, as you put it, I've never heard that term, but squirrel chasers. Where it's like, oh, hey, that's fun. Oh, hey, that's fun. You can come up with a million and one great ideas, but then getting them organized and effectively implemented. I mean, that's where the work lies.
It really is. You've got to be a delegator.
Yeah. So what were some of the things that you did to identify the areas that you had to delegate right away?
So one of the things that I did, and I use this with my students now too, because it was so helpful for me, was to just so simple. Dump out everything you're doing. I was doing so many different things because I was wearing so many different hats. And so what I did was I dumped all that out just on a piece of paper, wrote down everything I was doing, and then looked at it and said, okay, what of these things can be grouped together? Like, these are all kind of bookkeeping things. And these are all kind of like rental management things and project management stuff I was doing. And then I looked at that and then I figured, what's my biggest pain point right now? What is the most important thing that I can delegate off to somebody else that will free up my time and give me energy? You know, some of that stuff is just really energy draining. So really understanding what gives you energy and what takes away your energy, that played a part too in deciding. And then I just went from there, kind of ranked those roles and then started filling them.
Yeah, that's interesting. But how did you fill those roles without, you know, the common trap I think that a lot of us fall into is we see help or other team members as an expense and not an asset or not somebody that is, you know, propelling the company forward. So how did you decide what that budget looked like for those people as you brought them on And, you know, what did it look like to make your company bring in more income to then cover their quote unquote expense?
I think it's just realizing that you can't afford not to hire people. You are always going to stay in that same spot if you're doing everything and you're not putting people in place to do it. So it's really figuring out what are some creative things that you can do, you know, if you don't have money to hire people right away. Like, for example, I wasn't sure about that right at first. And my first hire, because my biggest pain point was acquisitions, mm-hmm. not a really good salesperson. I think that's a myth. I should stop saying that because I say that all the time. And it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, I think, when I do that. So it's not my favorite thing. And that was a pain point for me. So like, I was trying to figure out, well, what can I pay this person? You know, I had no idea. I'd never hired an acquisition person before. And one of the things, you know, that made it super easy is bring them on as just commission for a while, you know, and that, and so I kind of started working this model where I would hire people for, you know, 90 days as a 1099 contractor, see how it goes, see how they perform. If they're performing, if they're bringing more revenue in by their activities that they're doing, then that's somebody I want to keep on the team. And because they are generating revenue, I can afford to pay them.
Right.
So I, you know, go in with like a lower amount and just say, hey, we're going to reevaluate everything in 90 days. Let's see what you got, see what you bring in, and, you know, let them show you that they can pay for themselves.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And people that aren't, you know, if you're not in the flipping business, which I've flipped a lot of houses, not quite 1,000, but flipping's a full-time job.
It is.
And there's constant moving parts and pieces. How did you train your team? You know, I've heard of people, and I did this, where you have basically the same fixtures and same faucets, the same lights, everything goes in the same house, right? You can fix that pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But how did you train your team on, I guess, what the final product looks like? About, because each house is unique. It's a brand new project every single time. So what did that look like, getting people on the same board of what the finished standard is?
Well, most of the people didn't need to know any of that information anyways. So I didn't bother them with that. Like, the acquisition guy doesn't need to know, you know, he needs to know what my costs are, obviously, so he can estimate repairs correctly. But beyond that, it's like you said, like, we just built system. I realize what's working. And so having the system and the process, like, here's the materials that we use every single time.
Right.
We use the same contractor. Like, we put out a very consistent product. Mm-hmm. And then I find like one or two little ways that I can sort of do something different, you know, so that it's not carbon copy the same, but it's something small, you know, it's like a tile choice or something, you know, like, I'll use a different backsplash in that house. But, you know, as far as the rest of the team goes, getting them on board, it was really just getting them on board with the system and the process that was in place, more so than just like material selections. You know, it's like, this is how we operate. This is how we measure what we're doing, and really focusing more on that for them.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that's absolutely critical. Talk to us about the financing side of your business. Was that, I mean, as you're growing this, and especially in the flipping business, you can be out millions of dollars at a time, just with projects in motion. So how did you guys fund your projects? You know, was there anything creative you guys did? What did that look like?
So I have been 100% from day one, private money. Mm. That's exclusively all I use. I don't do hard money. I don't go to banks. It's all been private money. And I have several relationships with several different private money lenders. And they all look a little different. You know, I've got some that'll hold things for me a little bit longer. So, because I like to do like owner finance wraps, you know, so I'm wrapping the note to the end buyer. So I've got lenders that will do that, that'll carry them for a little bit longer time. Then I've got my short-term lenders that I use. And I've kind of got most of their terms all the same at this point. But, you know, getting started, it was all a little different because I hadn't worked with people before. So I have to prove myself before I go in and ask, you know, for the lower interest rate or whatever. But it's all been exclusively private money for the last 18 years.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. That's absolutely awesome. And can you explain to us the difference between private money and hard money?
Sure. So private money is just like individuals. It could be family members, friends, people with retirement accounts, IRAs, 401ks, just deep pockets, you know, and they want to put their money somewhere versus the stock market or just have it sit in a savings account in a bank. We provide a much higher return for them. So it's really, it's just individuals, and that's totally relationship based. And, you know, we nurture those relationships. In fact, I had a private money lender call me. She's been a lender of mine for 18 years now. And there's nothing like when someone calls you and says, I've got money, what do you got? I need to put this money to, you know, they're calling me looking for stuff because they want their money out there versus going to a bank or a hard money lender where you've got to go through all these processes. You know, you've got to have appraisals and inspections sometimes, and maybe a survey and lots of closing costs and loan origination fees and like all these other things. Whereas with the private money, you have way more flexible terms. You can negotiate those terms a little bit. The trade-off typically is a little higher interest rate, but to me, I'm okay with absorbing that because of the ease of use with the money.
Right. Oh gosh. Yeah, absolutely. Oftentimes the ease and the speed of the money is worth more than the price of the money.
Oh yeah. It's literally an email or a phone call and the money's there every time. It's great.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's something that people overlook on those. And that translates over even to, you know, the commercial side of things when it comes to bridge debt. I mean, we're seeing a lot of stuff being taken down right now with bridge debt just because closing timelines have become compressed and we need the money. We need it in 30 days. And, you know, your agency debt's going to take 45 or 60. So, you know, we're going to use bridge debt and they're going to close. They're going to charge us twice what maybe agency debt is, but oh, well, like we're getting the deal done.
And in some cases too, they won't even finance those projects. Like I had a speaker come to my meetup when we were talking about storage units and, you know, she was talking about how banks won't lend, like it's a commercial property, but if it's mismanaged, they won't lend on it. And so you can use leverage your private money to buy those deals just like you would a normal residential transaction.
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Talk to us about building your meetup. That's something that, you know, we don't talk a lot about on this show, but kind of if you can kind of give us a breakdown on your meetup, what that looks like and really what it's done for the people in your group and for your business.
It's been great. I love the meetup, especially now that we can meet in person. Right. It was kind of unfortunate. We started our meetup. It was me and a friend of mine. We started it as a spinoff of a larger organization. So we're running the San Antonio chapter, but we started it right before COVID and we didn't know that was coming. Obviously, we had a space planned and all this stuff, and then COVID hit. And so we had been meeting virtual up until a couple of months ago. Mm. So it's been really nice to get in front of people again and be in person. But it's been a great place for just women. You know, we run a women's meetup, but for us to get together, just talk shop. I bring different speakers in to educate the women on different exit strategies, different financing options, you know, how to raise private money, how to handle contractors, like all these things are just like anything that you'd ever want to learn about. We kind of bank up the topics and then I find people that can come speak, or sometimes I'll speak or my co-host will speak. And it's been a great place to network with other people. I know some of the members do deals and stuff together. We're able to make referrals to each other. Like, hey, who's a good cleaning company? Do you have a good electrician? And we trust each other because it's a small group, you know? So I think there's a lot of power in having those connections.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the keys to growing and scaling, obviously, is doing things like that where you can have those connections. Cause again, that's doesn't matter what your asset class is. Yeah, you're gonna need those names and those referrals along the way to really grow. That's been fantastic. What's it been like tackling all of this? And maybe you kind of answered this already, but tackling all of this and raising 5 children. I mean, that's 2 full-time jobs in and of itself.
Tell me about it. That's why I have all this gray hair you can't see in here. It's all underneath there, but it's there for sure.
You got hair. I'm bald. So you
know, yeah, that'll be next. Pull my hair off from all these kids. No, I mean, luckily they're spaced out in age, so it's manageable, but I mean, it's definitely still a thing. You know, I still have to take care of the kids and deal with all their stuff. And especially now during summertime, trying to work from home has been interesting. But, you know, the way I navigate through that a lot of times is just like I do in my business. Like when I learn, I swear, like when I learned to delegate in my business, it carried over into my home life really quickly because I saw the power in the delegation of things. And so it became a thing where, what at home can I hand off? Mm. You know, and at first I had this mentality like, well, I really can't afford a cleaning person, or do I really want to pay the yard guy? But, you know, in the end, it's like, it's the best thing ever. You can't, it's like one of those things, again, you can't afford not to. What is your time worth to you? And for me, I would rather spend time. I take my kids to school every single day. I pick them up every single day. I don't miss any of their events, sporting events, school stuff, plays, whatever. Like I get to be there for all of that. And I really attribute that to having a good system in place for work and for home that allows me to do that.
Mm, yeah. And I think that's key.
that's key, because there are those things, like you said, the yard or cleaning the house, or in, and you can justify it some way, like, well, it just takes me a couple hours a week to do this or whatever it is. But what's your time worth? What's your time worth? And what more can you get done in that same time, revenue wise? You know, when you're not cleaning, you know, cleaning the bathroom. So
yeah, and not just revenue, but your relationships too. Like, if I have the opportunity to sit on the couch and watch a movie with my son or go watch him play hockey, like, I'm going to do that versus scrubbing a toilet. You know, it's just, it's a no brainer for me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And speaking of hockey, I didn't realize they played hockey in San Antonio.
They do. They do.
I thought that was only a far north sport. I mean, obviously it's not, but you know, I didn't know.
Well, I mean, Tampa's in the playoffs.
Right. Understood on the professional level, but I'm thinking more in like the, you know, I'm assuming it's somewhere high school and under that they're playing hockey. That's loads of fun. I learned something new today. Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about, you know, the keys to scaling being obviously delegation and hiring people out. You know, you guys you've done a lot of flipping, you've moved into wholesaling, and now you're doing coaching. Are you guys involved in any other businesses or other things that have also helped you kind of produce ancillary streams of revenue?
Yes. So actually there's a couple of things. So one is software, helping, well, it's already launched, but obviously improving and developing, creating partnerships and integration relationships, things like that, with a CRM system for real estate investors. Very exciting. So I've been really invested in that right now, working on that. And also, speaking of hockey, another pet project that I'm working on that does have to do with real estate too is putting together a plan to build a small synthetic ice training facility. So every time I say that, people's faces are like, what? So there's a product, there's a few different ones out there. The one that we've been looking at is called Glyce, but it's a synthetic material that looks like ice, feels like ice. You can actually skate on it, but it's some kind of weird plastic, really thick plastic. But they come out, they install it all. It's all, you know, locks together. So there's no seams or anything. They put the boards in and everything. It's pretty cool. And you don't have to keep it refrigerated, you know, so you don't need a Zamboni or anything like that. But there's just not enough ice in San Antonio. We have one rink here. And we have a lot of kids here that play hockey. Since we're a military city, we have a lot of people coming from all over the country that they want to play or their kids want to play. And there's just not enough space for that. So if we have a small facility dedicated just to that, I think it'd be super cool. And it fills a need.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, you know, going back to eliminating the things that are distractions and or things that just take away from the actual sport of playing hockey. Like, okay, now I'm going to have a facility at 50 degrees or 48 degrees, whatever it is. And then, you know, heap the ice cold and then have a Zamboni. It's like all that stuff goes away. So You guys, and is that a product you guys are going to take to market and help grow? Or is this just something you're bringing into San Antonio?
We're going to bring it into San Antonio and see how it goes and maybe expand out of there if we need to, but it's really born from a need that we have here. Like it's surprising to me how many rinks there are. Even in Austin, there's multiple rinks and there's a ton of them in Dallas, but here we literally have one sheet of ice.
Right.
And when you're talking about hockey players, like kid hockey players, adult beer leaguers, figure skaters, public skating, all the clinics and stuff that they do sometime. I mean, that's in one sheet of ice and you've got to try to schedule for a city of like 1.2 million people. It's insane. That becomes I'd rather just do a whole rink, but I figure we start small with this. And then if we want to do a full size rink, then we find investors and build that out too.
Right. Wow. I love that. That's tons of fun. This has been great. I've really enjoyed just kind of digging into your guys' business and history and, you know, hearing about how you have scaled that really, you know, via people and putting processes in place. Cause that is probably where the work lies, I would think, in any of these is building, getting the right people and building the processes to make the machine run.
And then I think beyond that, the next piece is just delegating that off. You got to do those things first and then you hand it off to somebody.
Right. Where you're stepping out of, by that, do you mean you're stepping then out of the CEO seat and you're letting somebody else really just run the whole thing? Is that what you're saying?
No, I still like being the CEO, But passing it off to a COO has been the ideal situation, at least for me, it has, you know, because it's like, I can still check in with things. Things are still running, but I don't have to be a part of the day-to-day every single thing. And I'm not the bottleneck anymore either, which is another thing that we run into a lot. I feel like as entrepreneurs, we are the bottleneck oftentimes in our business. And so finding ways to not be the bottleneck is really key to growing and scaling too.
Oh gosh, yes. And that's it. That's it. Get out of our own way.
Yeah.
Get out of our own way. That's absolutely great. Let's jump here into the final four. I've got four questions, which are, the first one's this. If I gave you just $20,000 to invest in real estate, what would you do with it and why?
I would invest it in, that's a tough one, $20,000.
All you get.
Is this assuming I've never done a deal before or like,
I don't know. You got 20 grand. What are you going to do with it today? Like, yeah, let's today. Just take it today. That's all you have is 20 grand. You know, everything, you know, 20 grand.
Marketing. I would put it in marketing.
Marketing for deals.
Yep.
Gotcha. And then what would you do with it once you had a deal?
Obviously take it all the way through the process.
Very good. Very good. All right. I like it.
But if I had started and I got 20 grand, I would definitely put it in education. I would find a coach or a mentor or some like group that I am aligned with, not just any guru or whatever out there, but find somebody that would really be helpful to me. I would put it in education.
Right. That's great. I like that. I like both of those answers. Question number two is this. If you'd help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
One mistake in real estate. God, there's so many. You know, I'm just thinking about from a rehabbing perspective, like stop over improving your properties. That's a big mistake a lot of people make. And so really having a tight project management process is key. I feel like a lot of people stumble right there. So that'd probably be kind of a different answer, but definitely something to think about.
No, for sure. Because scope creep certainly can happen. And suddenly you've got a project that's way bigger than what you had budgeted for.
And maybe the bigger thing is like just focusing on your numbers, making sure your numbers are good and that you're buying right. Because no matter what you buy, as long as you're buying it right, you're going to win. I mean, you're not going to lose anything if you're buying at the right price.
Right, right. Absolutely. That's great. Question number three is this. When it comes to investing in the world, what is one thing you are doing to make the world a better place?
I am raising good humans. But also working with women in this industry and really helping them. That's my coaching is primarily focused on women, helping them get the confidence to get out there and do deals and watching their success and showing them the path to financial freedom. I think has been really rewarding and in a way that I like to contribute.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, that's great. That's great. Absolutely love it. That's awesome. Melissa, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Pretty simple. I have a website. It's themelissajohnson.com. And everything about me is on there. All my social links are at the bottom of the first page. I've got my podcast up there. I've got free little mini course just on working on your business. And then a whole about me, just if you want to hear other podcasts and things I've been on, kind of what I'm doing. That's the best place to find me.
Awesome. And if you're just listening, that's Johnson with a J-O-H-N-S-O-N, Johnson.com. So themelissajohnson.com. Melissa, thanks so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.